is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Happy Monday, everybody. Preseason football is officially in the books after last night, which means let the countdown continue. We are just 10 days away from the start of the 104th NFL season, which means the next game we see is for real. It's for keeps. Welcome into the Lombardi Line alongside former NFL general manager Michael Lombardi out at his office in Jersey. I'm Stormy Bonantoni, live from our recent studio at Circa Resort and Casino. Michael, can you just smell the fresh cut grass in the air? It is time.
Yeah. It is time. Yeah, you can feel it. I mean, it's always around that Labor Day, you get that sense that, okay, here we go. Let's get this thing kicked off and get it going. Typically, you know, what Rick Venturi said yesterday on our show about we're not used to having these 2 weeks to get ready. I actually think it's good because some teams, as we go through the next 48 hours, teams are going to reconstruct their rosters a little bit. We'll see a lot of movement. The Patriots traded for two offensive linemen. We're going to see a lot of shifting in the backup quarterback market. And this gives you a chance to kind of have a few practices before you actually have to go play a game and prepare for the opening day. So it actually works out really well.
Yeah, and to your point, the 53-man roster cut-down day is approaching tomorrow. So we'll get a lot into just like overarching thoughts, what we learned from preseason. We've got plenty of season win totals to come in the NFL throughout the course of the next 2 hours. Also, in about 30 minutes, we're going to go behind the counter with our guy TG, Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata. Talk some NFL futures, liability, which win totals and futures have moved the most. Hour two, we have our recent NFL analyst, former NFL wide receiver Mike Pritchard, who's going to join us, give his perspective on which teams he thinks are most ready for week one, his favorite bets of the season. Lots to get to today, as well as the latest on some of the big names who are still holding out right now. We'll have a step into my office to lead off hour two later on today, which will be great. And a lot of young quarterback talk, which is where we're going to start here today after the Houston Texans 17-13 win yesterday to close out the preseason. C.J. Stroud was officially named the starter, which, Michael, of course, this is something we all expected. I don't think they draft C.J. Stroud in the top five to have him play behind Davis Mills, but we finally got the news yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, look, why not, right? The new head coach, D'Amico Ryan, signed a six-year contract. The one thing we know for sure in Houston this year, they won't be looking for a head coach this offseason because the last 2 years they have been, and they finally have some continuity. And D'Amico has a fairly long runway. Now, I think we forget this, but he was offered the Bronco job, and he turned the Bronco job down to go to his team that he loved the most, which was the Texans. Met his wife there, all those things, and he has more job security. I think when you take over a program that fired head coaches in their first season 2 years in a row, you feel pretty comfortable in your job security. So why not? Like, we know Stroud's going to struggle. We know he's going to show plays. He'll show good. He'll show bad. He'll show ugly. He'll show great. It's going to get the whole spectrum of it, if you will. But if you've got a long leash, which D'Amico Ryans has, why not?
And good for him that he does, based on exactly what you just said about the way things have gone for previous head coaches in Houston, trying to rebuild there. What you said about C.J. Stroud and the ups and downs that we're going to see from him, that's expected for a young quarterback regardless. What we saw in the preseason, 11 to 20, 89 yards, one touchdown finally yesterday, also had one interception over the course of eight series. Felt like he looked more comfortable in the limited action that we saw last night, Michael. But overall, what did you learn about C.J. Stroud this preseason?
It's going to take a little time. I mean, let's put things in perspective, right? He's at Ohio State around a lot of great players. And he looked towards the sideline to get every play. And he basically didn't have to organize the huddle, didn't have to change anything. It's college football today. This is what we're used to, right? Same thing with every quarterback coming out. They look to the sideline and they rely on that. So there's going to be a lot of growing. Always in shotgun, never under center. Now he's under center. It's a lot of things he's got to work himself through, but I think they'll keep the playlist very small. Look, it's going to be a lot of Damian Pierce. The Texans feel like their offensive line's really good. They've got a really good running back. They got a quarterback that they think can make some plays. I don't think they're going to be a team that just tries to throw it all over the lot. They got to keep the game close, win with their defense.
Yeah, and, you know, this is a quarterback situation that Houston's just been trying to find some sort of solution after Deshaun Watson was traded 7-26-1 over the course of the last two seasons. So can they just kind of chip away and start to take those positive steps? Damian Pierce had a super endearing interview on the broadcast yesterday, as did Will Anderson. It's nice to get to know some of these young faces and pieces and their personalities, but I got to tell you, Michael, my favorite part about watching last night's preseason game was not just, of course, that, you know, the money moved toward the Texans and the Texans ended up winning as the a slight dog went from 2.5 to 1. They end up winning under the total stays for 37.5 as well, but was the Saints kicker. I love this groupie kid. Blake Groupie competing with Will Lutz for the job. All of the stuff they were showing about the tweets of him and security stopping him because he's like 5'6", 150-something pounds, and people think he's a little kid and he's not actually a player, even though he's trying to leave the player exit, trying to get stopped. I loved that story. That was so fun.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think, too, you know, this kicker story is going to be an interesting next 2 days, right?
Remind me about my team.
You know, I mean, they're going to have, they have to carry two kickers. Cleveland, Cade York can't, you know, he's playing army kicking right, left, right, left. I mean, he can't get it down the middle. And one thing we've known, if you look at the league, the Eagles have a really good kicker. How? Well, Caleb Sturgis got hurt and they took Jake Elliott, and all of a sudden Jake Elliott's the star, right? The Chiefs have a great kicker. You know, their kicker got hurt. Harrison Buckner came in off the Carolina practice squad, and he's great. The Raiders have a great kicker. Carlson, you know, cut by Minnesota on their practice. The Raiders grab him. Now he's great. This is, like, going on right now. Yeah. And as good as Evan McPherson was 2 years ago, sometimes these young guys don't kick as well. So I think that's an interesting development that really affects the line more than anything we're going to talk about. These kickers, because those are legitimate points that either get on the board or don't.
It is. It's going to be really important. And you mentioned my team, which I feel like I'm scrolling Twitter every day trying to see if we can get an update in this situation, because both Jake Moody and Zane Gonzalez get injured in the same week. And Kyle Shanahan even said, I've never been in a position like this before where we're in training camp. We have two really good kickers, and now we're just scuffling to figure out what to do here before we have to cut our rosters down. And then you throw the Nick Bosa holdout into it all. Things are not all sunshine and rainbows for one of the top teams in the NFC this year. But Michael,
well, I think they'll get Nick Bosa done. I'm counting on that. I think you got to count on that. Now, how much could he play opening day, heat, humidity, all that? I think he'll play enough, but I think they'll get him done. I would be shocked if he wasn't done by this time next Monday.
I hope so. And we'll have him in your office a little bit later when you're given some of that sage advice that you always do on a Monday. But generally speaking, as we get closer to this cutdown day, Michael, like, you've been in those rooms having to make the tough decisions. What's this time like internally for organizations where you have different coaches who are fighting for guys, who are trying to make a roster spot? You're rooting for this person, but the numbers just don't make sense and you can't keep them all.
Well, you got to look first for special teams, right? You got to say, are we going to dress this player? It's two issues here. Who's stressing for the game, 47 players, and who are the players that are really going to impact next year's team, 48 to 60 players? Right, those five guys that get an NFL check, and then 10 more, so it's 63. So those 15, how do we protect the 15 best we don't want to lose, and how do we cover the team that's going to get dressed? So you got to carry the guys that are hurt, so you carry them, and then you put them on IR, and you can bring back somebody. So we'll see a lot of veteran guys get cut, but essentially they'll go back to their teams because they don't have to go through the waiver wire. They don't have to get cured. They won't have to get claimed. What you don't want to do is expose a young player that you want on your practice squad or you want to be part of your organization, knowing that some team could take him away, particularly in the offensive line and defensive line if one gets out there. That's why the Patriots had a trade for two of those offensive linemen, because both those guys had really good preseasons and they were going to get claimed if they made it to the waiver wire.
Yeah, it is an interesting process when you watch some of these players that don't get selected for a team, and then the next day they are on their way somewhere else on another roster. As far as what you saw over the last 3 weeks this preseason, Michael, were you able to gain any more clarity about some teams, for better or worse, like a team that impressed you a lot, or a team that now you are already doubting, but now you have more concerns about? How'd you feel?
Well, a little bit of both. I think every team declared something, right? You know, like I wrote for the guide coming up, and I urge everybody to, we're going to have a supplemental guide to our pro football guide. It'll be coming out this week. And, you know, I would urge everybody to buy that. It'll help you in your handicapping as you move forward. Subscribe to that, I mean, and then this will do. But when I was going through, it was a really good exercise for me to go through, Stormy, because you kind of take a look at the teams. Like, let's just take the Jets, for example, right? Today we're hearing Becton's their right tackle, right? And we're here. Rodgers throws a touchdown pass to Wilson, and everything's hunky-dory. Mm-hmm. When you watch the game, it really wasn't hunky-dory. Like, it really wasn't. I mean, Becton struggled at right tackle. Like, and this is against the Giants twos. This is against the Giants twos, right? Third and five. And Wilson makes an incredible one-handed catch along the sideline. It was pass interference they called. But or else they're off the field for the second time against the Giants' twos. The first time they got him off the field, too. And then he makes the great throw in the end zone, which are really just throws that he made. I saw Rodgers miss a throw wide open that he typically makes. So I wasn't overly impressed with what they did. I really wasn't. And so I think you got to take that in. Now, does that mean they're going to bomb out against Buffalo? No. I think you take the information, you weigh it, and you look at it and say, okay, here's their weaknesses, here are their strengths, here's what we learned about them. And I think you do that for every team. Atlanta's a team, for example, that I couldn't really tell because they didn't give Ridder enough reps, and they got so many skill guys, I just don't know how they're going to deploy them, and I think Smith didn't want to show his hand.
Yeah, well, this will certainly be a theme throughout the course of the show, analyzing what we learned in preseason, how we can push it forward. When we come back, looking at some more of those young quarterbacks.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Get ready, ladies and gentlemen. We have our updated NFL betting guide to be released this coming Thursday. Throughout the NFL preseason, our VSiN experts have been reevaluating every single team to help give you the best betting edge. Our updated NFL betting guide is going to have picks from every on-air host. Yes, Michael and I both have some in there. Team-specific preseason analysis, how to use VSiN betting splits and football contest strategies. If you want the best and most comprehensive collection of picks, predictions, and previews, now's the time to come join us. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber for as low as $19 or save 50% off the monthly price with an annual subscription and bet smarter all year long. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. And as Michael mentioned off the top of the show, he specifically for this guide has taken away his big notes from every single team. So we're going to get you all geared up here. And Michael, we were talking off the top about CJ Stroud being named the starting quarterback for the Houston Texans. There are a number of first-year starting quarterbacks, including a couple of other rookies who are about to make their season debuts next week in Bryce Young, who is, of course, the number one overall pick via a trade with the Bears to the Carolina Panthers, and Anthony Richardson going 4 overall to the Indianapolis Colts. Based on what you've seen from those three guys, who's the most ready right now?
Yeah, that's a hard question because, you know, I would say Bryce Young is, but he hasn't had a lot of protection, right? So, but his timing, his rhythm, you can see it. It's there. And his arm is really good for a guy who's not very tall. You know, he's got an electric, the ball jumps off his hand. So I would say he would be. And I think once they game plan around him and they can run the ball with Miles Sanders and Chuba Hubbard, they should be better. They've got to be play better up front. That's going to be the key. So I would lean him. I think he's ready because he's kind of done a little bit more of the huddle calls, been under center, changed at the line. The Alabama offensive team with Bill O'Brien was similar to what the pro style game is. The other two are dynamic in what they can do athletically, especially Richardson, obviously. Richardson just doesn't have a lot of great players around him. And Jonathan Taylor, I would find it hard to believe that he would be on the team on opening day, more on PUP than on some other team.
Yeah, and we did see that update from ESPN Stephen Holder this morning about Jonathan Taylor, that evidently another team has been involved beyond the Dolphins when it comes to what his where his services might end. I agree with you, though. I feel like it's going to be a situation where he stays in Indy.
Yeah.
What have you heard most recently?
I almost get the sense, look, everybody has their sources, right? I get the sense that the agent is feeding Stephen Holder the information, because everybody I talk to, Stormy, they don't think there's anything going on.
Yeah.
Like, nobody thinks there's anything going on. And Ballard, Chris Ballard, the general manager of the Colts, he's not going to give them away. You know, I mean, and I think the agent thinks that, you know, the longer we play hardball, this is going to work out for us. I don't see that. You know, first of all, nobody in the league wants your problem. Like, nobody wants your problem. Like, they got enough of their own problems. Why should I take your problem, give you compensation, and then pay your problem? Like, that's not, like, that list of people that are in that group is really small. Now, would teams be circling like vultures if he was a free agent? Of course, because you don't have to pay anything. Would he be willing to play on his rookie contract? Of course, you don't have to pay him, but it's not very much money. But you add two components: compensation for the Colts, compensation for Taylor. All of a sudden, that list narrows down. I think a lot of this, though, there's six teams, now it's down to two. Schefter was on Chicago radio today and said the Bears aren't in it. And we remember the Bears were one of the hot teams after them. Remember that?
Yep.
I think there's so much bad information out there that comes from self-proclaimed experts that I think you have to be really careful. And as we get into the betting market and the betting week with the NFL, which will be huge, we know this, we have to remind ourselves every single day to block out the noise.
Well, and that's why we're lucky we have somebody like you who has that direct line to a lot of these people and the different rooms around the National Football League, given the years and decades of experience that you have in the league. According to those reports, the trade talks will, quote, go down to the wire, that wire being tomorrow, the deadline that Indianapolis has given Taylor to ultimately seek that trade. We'll see how things play out, but I'm with you that it seems like PUP week one, him with Indy, seems like the thing that's going to make the most sense. And again, going back to our previous point of Anthony Richardson and having this young quarterback, it would probably help if you have somebody to share the burden with offensively and somebody who can take a little bit of that load off of you if you're Anthony Richardson. What we saw from the young QB in preseason, 13 of 29, 44.8% completion percentage, 145 yards, one pick, seven rush attempts. So he did show a little bit of his mobility. We only saw, though, two or three designed runs, Michael, and I think that's something as we get to the regular season that's going to be the difference maker for Anthony Richardson. In the preseason, he's unfortunately trying to focus on accuracy. We didn't really see as much of that as we would like. That's going to be a work in progress throughout the course of this season, but we'll see a little bit more of the mobility, see the tools that he has to work with. And as we heard from Rick Venturi yesterday, talked a lot about the poise that Anthony Richardson had, and he learned a lot more positives rather than negatives this preseason about him.
Yeah, I think Rick really nailed it. I mean, he's, you know, he was more comfortable in the pocket. He didn't look panicked. And what Rick said yesterday is true. He's not one look and run. I mean, that's always the concern with young quarterbacks. Okay, he's not open. Where do I go? Well, he wasn't panicked. He understood where he needed to go with the football. Look, he's not going to be accurate. I'm just going to tell you that right now. He wasn't accurate in college. It's going to take time for him to become accurate. You know, Josh Allen wasn't accurate in college either. His first year in the National Football League, 25% of the open throws he had, he missed. 25%. Now, that number went down to 16 last year. That's huge. I mean, Jalen Hurts was the same way. Jalen Hurts started out about 26%, and last year he was at 14.2. So, you know, it's going to take some time to get him to become more accurate, and that's going to be a work in progress. And there's going to be some guys that are wide open he's going to miss, and there's going to be some throws he makes that we say, wow, watch, look at that. That's lights out.
That's what I say. My thing I keep going back to with Anthony Richardson is our jaws are always going to be dropping about this kid, and that could be a good thing or a bad thing. Like, it could be, oh my gosh, that was incredible, or oh my gosh, what in the world did that guy just do? And when you have a rookie quarterback with the tools like this and a high ceiling, you got to take the good with the bad as you work out the kinks. So we'll see how things ultimately play out for him. Eighth consecutive season opener, Michael, where Indy's had a different starting quarterback. The Colts plus four against the Jags in that week one game, total 45.5. By the way, there's also a great article out on VSiN.com this morning from Steve Mackinnon about rookie quarterbacks. He's tracked over the last handful of years rookie quarterback records and betting systems based on at least seven games for a year one starter. 52 examples since 2004, including five in 2020-21 alone. And one of the interesting nuggets I'd like your opinion on, Michael, over the last 17, week one, two, and three games for rookie quarterbacks, starting teams are 1-15-1 straight up, 4-13 ATS. Those early season games for the rookie quarterbacks tend to struggle.
Yeah, and why? Why is that? Because the speed of the game will dramatically change at 1 o'clock on Sunday. Next week, 2 weeks from now, or 13 days from now. It'll change, and you can't prepare for that change. The preseason is a microcosm of how fast the game will go. And what also will change are the multiplicity of coverages, you know, what they're running, and the surprise element. Nobody showed anything. That's why it made me laugh when people are making a big deal out of somebody's fourth quarter comeback. You know, like, okay, calm down. Nobody's playing, they're playing a high school defense. No disrespect to high school. But that's where the game's going to change. That's why these rookie quarterbacks will struggle. Now, C.J. Stroud goes into Baltimore. Baltimore's secondary is beat up, right? They're beat up. They're going to have a hard time playing man-to-man. They're going to have to do some adjusting to cover up some of the deficiencies. They're going to claim. They're going to trade. I don't know what they're going to do, but there'll be different corners on this Baltimore roster by next Sunday, by 13 days from now. So we know they're going to do some different things, but that helps C.J. Stroud as he kind of learns his way through. Jacksonville's been preparing for the six-back offense against Anthony Richardson since the day he got drafted, right? And the same thing with Atlanta. They've been preparing for Frank Wright's offense. So the game's going to go faster, and that's hard on young quarterbacks.
The total in that game, 43.5. Texans getting 10 against the Ravens in that season opener. Also, I mentioned the against the spread and straight up numbers. Averaging just 15 points per game, those rookie quarterbacks, the last 25 for rookie quarterbacks in those week one, two, and three games, 20-5 to the under. So again, none of this is definitive, but just food for thought as you're approaching some of these rookie quarterback season opening games, early season games. Again, that breakdown from Steve Mackinnon at VSiN.com up on the website today. Those were the rookies. We didn't even get to the Sam Howell and Jordan Love of it all. Maybe we can pick up on that a little bit later on here in the program, Michael, but throughout the next hour and a half, we're going to have so much breaking down season win totals, season futures, and that conversation is going to start in just about 10 minutes or so with Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook over at the Borgata out there in Atlantic City, because there's been some movement. We look at a lot of these openers and people make their positions known early. Now, as we're getting closer to the season, where do those numbers sit right now? Don't go anywhere. Plenty more Lombardi Line ahead here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Get rewarded before you ever place a bet with the G-Bank Visa Signature Card. Unlike other credit cards that decline sports betting transactions or treat them as a cash advance, the G-Bank Visa Signature Card can load directly to your favorite sportsbook apps. You'll earn a 1% cash rewards on gaming and sports app loads every time and 2% on other purchases. G-Bank Visa is a card designed for gaming and sports fans everywhere and works with apps like DraftKings, BetMGM, and Caesars. To learn more, go to g.bank/VSIN. Welcome back to the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonatoni with you as we welcome into the show, as we always do on a Monday, Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata out there in Atlantic City. Had a great conversation yesterday, TG, talking a lot about college football. And now officially we have the NFL preseason in the rear view. And this is our last Monday we're going to have you on without real games to preview. It is a great time to be a sports bettor.
Yeah. I mean, this is where, you know, you can feel the excitement. Summertime, it's, you know, with just baseball going on day to day, That's really where you take the lion's share of the NFL futures and in terms of season wins and division conferences and so on. And, you know, this week in particular, everything gets ratcheted up in those markets. Everybody's coming in. They want to make sure they get down before the season begins, whether it's, you know, a bet on the Super Bowl or a bet on their favorite team's season win total. So this is the week here where we are going into week one of college football, but this is probably the most popular week of the year for NFL futures.
Yeah, no question, TG. Everybody's attention is turned to it. I want to hit a game that I find very interesting. San Francisco, Pittsburgh, in all the books that I've looked at, they have the most tickets written. I don't know if it'll be that way at the Borgata, but there seems to be a lot of interest in this game, and it's all on Pittsburgh. The line opened at 3. It's at 2.5. I'm getting the sense this could close around next week at 2. Do you feel that way?
I'm not sure if we're going to see 2. In terms of the betting handle, and for two marquee teams, very popular with the betting public, this game, at least here, isn't one of the more popularly bet games. Now, the Steelers, for what we have written on this game, the Steelers have gotten most of the handle so far. I see this game kind of staying right around 2.5. It did open 3. The Steelers' money has driven it down to 2.5. And I think, if I could predict where this goes, my prediction would be I think it kind of stays right around 2.5. Unless something really, you start to see a lot of 49ers money come in, people laying that 2.5, and you may see it go back to 3. Not sure if we get down to 2, though.
Because, TG, you said this is such a big week for people to get down on those NFL futures, you know, that last minute before the season starts, set the tone right. Are the Steelers one of those teams that you've seen people buy in on because of the narrative of, you know, Mike Tomlin never has a losing season in his career as a head coach in Pittsburgh that goes back 15 seasons? What are some of the other win totals that you've seen a lot of people buy in on or have had some movement?
Yeah, so the Steelers, in particular, their season win total is still at 8.5, and that's really comes down to, do you think they're finally going to have a losing season, or do you think this streak is going to continue? If you think it's going to continue, then you take the over there. You'll get the 9 wins. But in terms of how that's being bet here, yes, the Steelers have been a popular team, so their season win total has been being bet over, and in terms of their futures for the division, they're a liability for us in the AFC North. They're the only team that we have liability on in the AFC North. We also have a little bit of liability on them to win the AFC in particular. So they've been getting a lot of love from the bettors here. In terms of the season win totals that we've seen movement on, some that we've adjusted downward. The Cardinals have been one that we adjusted. We opened them 5. They're down to 4.5. The Falcons have been an interesting one because there's been movement and then movement back. So we opened them 8.5. They were getting faded early, moved that to 8. Then you started to see some other respected people come in on the over. So we're back to 8.5 now, right where we opened it with Atlanta, but they did dip down to 8 there for a little bit. The Ravens have had some moves. We opened them 9.5. They got their season win total got bet up to 10. Now we're at 10.5 with them. The Cowboys is another team that, again, we opened 9.5, moved them to 10. Now they're at 10.5. The Jags actually have been adjusted downward. Opened them 10.5, went to 10, now sitting at 9.5. The New York Giants, this was kind of one just for local interest. I kind of went a little bit high, I think, to open at 8.5, seeing, you know, if anybody would take the over. They didn't. So we went down to 8. Now that's sitting at 7.5 there. For the Giants, Rams went down 0.5 a game from 7 to 6.5. The Niners are back. We have them back to 11 now, 10.5 up to 11. The Eagles went from 11 to 11.5. They have the highest season win total there in the NFC. with the Niners there right behind. Seattle's another one that has been a popular future play in the NFC. They're a liability for us in their division. Their season win total, 8.5 to 9. So they've been certainly a team that bettors have been optimistic on. And, you know, I think, you know, based on what Geno Smith did last year and the pieces that he has around him, you know, there's good reason there for optimism in Seattle. And the in terms of the only other movement that we've seen in the season win market has been the Commanders. They've gone from 7 down to 6. So those are the teams that we've seen the movement on in the season win total market.
TG, the NFC East is fascinating to me in terms of the win totals for all the teams. I think all of them could go over. You know, who are the mm-hmm. 6 teams that are beating the Eagles? I mean, to me, that's a hard answer. I don't know who they are. I mean, it's going to take 6 teams to cash the under. Dallas, you know, Dallas is going to get to 10 wins. Who are the 7 teams that can beat Dallas? You know, the Giants at 7.5, okay, maybe they go, but they're pretty well coached. I could see them being 8-9, but you win that ticket. And then Washington at 6.5. I mean, they were 8-8-1 last year, and they got a better quarterback this year. I just think all those teams seem to be maybe a little bit undervalued.
Well, I certainly agree with your statements on the Eagles and the Cowboys. And I think the only way that those two teams go under is if you're betting them under, I think you're counting on some sort of major injuries happening there. Because both those teams, I think, are going to be very, very difficult to beat this year. They're both going to be in the thick of it to win the conference as long as they stay healthy. The Giants and the Commanders, listen, I think there's some optimism and some pessimism here that we're seeing amongst bettors. Washington is a team that's really been, their under has been getting hit for their season win total here. The Giants, I adjusted them down really because I just needed to get something on the air. And as soon as I moved it, now the fans, the local fans of the Giants are betting them over. So we're always a little bit skewed when it comes to the Giants and Giants futures. You know, we have liability on them to win the Super Bowl. Am I really concerned about that? No. But that's just par for the course here with them. But they're a team that, even though they did make it to the playoffs last year, I don't think in terms of the respected bettors that they're really thinking that they're going to come back and kind of duplicate that effort again this year.
Yeah.
It's tough with those two teams at the top of that division.
Yeah, and TG, like, because of the division in general, I think that's something that strays people away from the Giants. I know I personally, like, you look at the way that they've played in the division, 1-4-1 last year, 1-5 the year before, 2 division wins in 2 years, even when they did have an over 500 season a year ago. It's just, that's not a trend that can continue if you're the Giants. And I think specifically they're, we can call it a rivalry if you want with the Eagles, but they've won like 2 games in their last 14, I want to say, against the Eagles specifically.
Yeah. I mean, listen, to make it a rivalry, obviously it needs to be competitive, and you know, the Giants will, historically, yes, they're a rival for the Eagles, but it has not been competitive recently. I still don't think it's going to be competitive between these two teams this year. The only thing that I give the Giants credit for is Dable. I really am very high on Dable as a coach. I think he did a tremendous job last year. I can certainly see him duplicating that effort and getting, gets max effort out of what he has to work with there. And I think the Giants maybe still are a year away or 2 years away from really seriously contending.
Yeah. Coach of the year season to go for a reason.
Yeah, no question. I agree completely. And here's the thing about the Giants. I think we don't take into account, they need to run Daniel Jones. He needs to be part of that. Yes. He was a second leading rusher on their team. They need to run him. Yep. And the question then becomes, can he stay healthy? And if that happens, Tyrod Taylor, you're going to cash that under.
Appreciate your time, TG. Thanks for doing this.
All right. Thank you, guys.
That's Thomas Gable. He also talked about the move down on the Commanders. We'll talk Sam Howell and Jordan Love when we return here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You'll get a daily email recapping all of the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. You can sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check on the top VSiN experts leaderboard as well, where you can view betting records, profit, and ROI. See which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for just $19 for your first month at VSiN.com/subscribe. Now, earlier in the program, we were talking about those three rookie quarterbacks who were drafted in the top five, how we thought they might perform, what we saw from them from the preseason. But, Michael, there are a couple other quarterbacks as well who are going to be first-year starters in this league, young guys who are being given the reins to their respective teams' offenses, one of which is Sam Howell in the Washington Commanders, who we just had Thomas Gable on, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata, who said that they're one of those teams whose win total has gone down. They went from 7.5, now sitting at a 6.5, and there are still people betting the under, which I know based on your view of this Washington football team feels a little bit like a head scratcher.
It really does. I mean, look, I'm not sitting here trying to support Ron Rivera, who's had, and I'm going to say this correctly, and I want you to digest it, who's had four playoff seasons and only three winning seasons in his head NFL coaching career. Think about that. Four playoff seasons, three winning seasons. And so I think this is really a bet against Rivera. It can't be a bet against the offense, because I don't care what they do offensively, how will play better than Carson Wentz. It's just a fact. I mean, I know Howell's a young player. He's athletic. His teammates like him. They're endearing to him. I mean, you could see it all. Last year, there was a lot of tension. They won eight games last year. They lost three straight at the end of the year off their bye week. They had a game against the Giants that was easily winnable, that they turned the ball over in the red zone, which is what they did for the most of the part. This is a team that beat Philadelphia at home, and they turned it over two times in the game. And so, like, I think they're not getting enough respect for how good they were on defense last year, because they didn't create turnovers. They were 30th in the league in creating turnovers, yet very good on third down, very good in the red zone. And I think they've added to their defense. Look, I'm not a Rivera apologist by no means, but to me, it is somewhat perplexing how they've gone down from 6.5 to 6, and they won 8 last year, and now they're only going to win 5?
I mean,
I don't see it.
Michael, I was a team reporter for the Carolina Panthers when Ron Rivera was the head coach there, and it was always a topic of conversation, especially coming off of that Super Bowl appearance in 2015, that he had never had back-to-back winning seasons. It was like a regular thing with him that was really, really frustrating for the fan base. Another thing that Washington has added that I think should be beneficial to the squad this year is more fans in the stands with the ownership change.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll actually have a little bit of home field advantage this year, too.
Yeah, I mean, they actually will. Maybe people will come to the game, and it won't be all, you know, Giant fans or Cowboy fans like it typically has been. So yeah, like you made a great point in the last block about the Giants as it relates to the NFC East. They've been outscored 88-45 last year to the Eagles. Now, in one of those games, it was meaningless, and Davis Webb played quarterback, right? And so that didn't even, you know, and they've been outclassed by Philly in both games. I mean, really, when you had to play Philly, they couldn't play them. Whereas Washington beat Philly. Washington beat Philly, and yet they get no respect at all. And they, you know, and deservingly so, because they mismanage the games and they lose games they shouldn't. They shouldn't have lost to Tennessee. They shouldn't have lost to the Giants a second time, but they do. So there is the Rivera factor that plays into it.
For Sam Howell specifically this preseason, great completion percentage, 28 of 37 for 75.7% completions, 265 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks, the former fifth rounder winning the job over Jacoby Brissett. And this is an organization, too, that Kirk Cousins was the last Washington quarterback to play a full season. So hoping that Sam Howell can maybe be that guy and pushing that forward to another young quarterback who's getting the opportunity to have the reins for the first time for real. Jordan Love over there with the Green Bay Packers taking over for Aaron Rodgers, who's obviously been there for years and years, and a lot of expectations on this young quarterback. Pretty good completion percentage for him, too, in the appearances we saw of him him, 63.6%, 193 yards, three touchdowns, no picks for him, and did use his legs a little bit.
Yeah, I think what we're going to see out of Love is he doesn't have to be spectacular. Just be effective. You know, this summer he didn't really work the ball down the field very much. You know, he was more of an intermediate thrower, but he's got really good players around him. I mean, Aaron Jones is a top running back in the league. A.J. Dillon's a power back. The offensive line is good. I think Romeo Doubs and Christian Watson are going to be really good receivers. You know, Musgrave is the kid they drafted in the second round, will be a tight end. I think they're really good on defense, this Packer team. They've got edge guys. They can cover. They got a good front seven. I think he just has to play within himself, within the framework of the offense, and take the profits with what he does. He doesn't have to compete with the remembering of Aaron Rodgers. He's never going to be Aaron Rodgers. There's just the Packer fans have been spoiled for over 11,000 days. They've witnessed two of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game. They have two of the top 100 players play the position consecutively for 11,000 days. It's never going to be duplicated again in the history of the NFL. So just be who you are, and that could be good enough with the supporting cast. Again, they're at 7.5. Their defense gave up 34 points to the vaulted Lions offense last year. Oh, my God. They only gave up 34 points to them in two games, and Favre turned it over. And Rodgers turned it over.
And we talked about this yesterday, a division odds here, plus 375, 4-1, that's the same as the Chicago Bears. And I have completely different views of those two teams. And maybe to an extent, I'm talking myself into things a little bit too much here with Jordan Love and the Packers. But I look at what we saw from Aaron Rodgers on the field last year, and it wasn't Hall of Fame MVP quarterback Aaron Rodgers that we've seen over the last handful of years. It was a different guy. It was a guy that had turnover issues, that wasn't connecting with his young receivers. Maybe that could be a little bit of an advantage for Jordan Love, that to your point, he just needs to be okay and steady. And I'm sure being a younger guy probably has a different level of understanding with some of those young targets that Aaron Rodgers didn't have, that Aaron Rodgers didn't want to deal with at the time. I'm sure Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs are probably like, what is with this love affair of Garrett Wilson? You didn't give me the time of day for half the season last year. Christian Watson got his late in the year, don't get me wrong, but you know what I'm saying.
Well, look. Let's talk about Rodgers for a second here. You go back and watch the Giants. I did this morning. Watch the Giants Jet game and all this conversation about Becton at right tackle. Oh, we got our right tackle and Rodgers, and we moved the ball and it was great. No, it really wasn't. The Giants had their second team defense out there. The first drive of the game, they had a punt. The second drive of the game, they got a 3rd and 5, and Wilson makes a great one handed catch on the sideline. Becton got beat inside. It would have been a sack. You know, Rodgers had to get rid of the ball quickly. It was kind of static. It wasn't great. It wasn't like, oh, my God, this looks like Daniel Jones, when he played against Carolina. Admittedly, Carolina was playing a high school defense. He went up. He was 6 for 7. Waller had one drop. That was really good. This wasn't like, oh, my gosh. Like, let's put things in perspective. Like, they're going to have to play a lot better up front. And at the quarterback, I mean, Rodgers misses a wide-open tight end coming across the field. He never does that. He did last year. He did it again. So I think sometimes we forget. Like, that was the Giants' second-team defense out there.
That's what I was going to say.
Their first team.
Michael, it's a Giants preseason game. It's going to be a very different rude awakening on Monday Night Football against the Bills when you start this season out. Last 90 seconds here real quickly, because our producer, Elliot Bowman, made a really good point in the commercial break. When you look at Sam Howell, the completion percentage above 75%, you look at Jordan Love, his completion percentage around 64%, versus these rookie quarterbacks who are all sub 60, and I mean, saw Anthony Richardson 44%. Is there something to maybe not being a starter yet, but having NFL experience, playing against NFL defenses in practice, that we should take into our handicap?
No question. And look, it's not going to get better overnight because the speed of the game is going to increase, right? You're not throwing accurately in the summer when the coverages are easy. You're not going to throw accurately during the season. I fully expect Anthony Richardson, when we're sitting here next year at this time, his percent of hitting open receivers is going to be above 25%. Mm-hmm. I think the same thing for Stroud. I think the same thing for a lot of these guys. It's just the game's moving so fast, and their mechanics and their rhythm aren't quite tied together. I think it's going to be hard. I think it'll be really hard.
And I think especially for Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, coming from collegiate teams and programs where they had so much more talent than the people they were facing more often than not, the weapons were, it was a different situation for them in college than it is now at the NFL question. Level. So there will be a learning curve.
Yeah, but he's hitting wide open receivers. The same, you know, look, Ohio State's got Marvin Harrison might be the first pick overall in the draft if Caleb Williams doesn't come out, right?
Yes, sir.
I mean, that's, you're talking about, and they were playing backups against Utah, and the backups were great.